Hello, I'm Henry.
And I'm Trey.
And welcome to Marvelous, a Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast.
Where we go through the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe, show by show, movie by movie, in order of release.
And today we'll be talking about Thor, The Dark World.
What is the IMDb synopsis, Henry?
Oh, let me tell you, Trey. On IMDb, they say, when Dr. Jane Foster gets cursed with a powerful entity known as the Aether, Thor is heralded of the cosmic event known as the Convergence and the genocidal Dark Elves. I don't think that's a real sentence.
What does that even mean?
And Jane isn't cursed. She's infected? It's not magic. It's an Infinity Stone.
I mean, if they want to call it cursed, fine. But Thor is heralded of the cosmic event.
I don't understand English, or this isn't English, or what. I don't get it.
I don't even know what that's saying.
This might be the dumbest IMDb summary we've ever read.
Only because it is not grammatically correct.
Yeah, they should fix that. Maybe when our podcast gets spread out to the world, someone from IMDb will be listening and fix it.
Yeah. Henry, what's the context of this film?
All right, well, Trey, this movie takes place after the Avengers. Thor has now returned to Earth and is the hero of all of Earth, except for Jane Foster, because he totally forgot to say hi and left back for Asgard, and I think he just kind of chilled there for a year and a half or two, I don't really know, saving the Nine Realms or something.
Yeah, sounds about right.
The time seems a little bit unclear. I don't know how long Thor was gone relative to the Avengers or his own movie, but it's been two-ish years.
Yeah, I thought it was 2 years since Avengers, but if it's 2 years since he saw Jane, which is 6 months before Avengers, right?
Yeah, so it's been a year and a half, I think, since the Avengers. It's very unclear.
But also, the beginning of the movie starts with Loki in chains right after Avengers, so I'm not sure if that's meant to be, like, before a time jump.
Wait. The beginning of the movie starts with a legend of the Dark Elves. Then Loki.
You know what I mean.
I know, but I needed to be a butt.
Okay, butt. So, Henry, what did you first think of this movie when you saw it?
I do not like this movie. I think this is the worst movie of the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. Back then, I thought that, and now I think that. Especially now that we rewatched Hulk for this podcast, it really gave me a better reference for the lower quality movies of the MCU. So yeah, this is the worst to me. How about you, Trey?
I disagree. I don't really remember my first thoughts of it. I just remember thinking it was weird. But that was before I got into the MCU. And then after I got into the MCU, I remember liking this movie more than Thor. And I still like it more than Thor.
Well, it has a lot of strong scenes with Loki, but the story is just a complete mess, and it's not enough for me.
I do think it could have been better, but I still think it's stronger than Thor.
You still do?
Yeah, because Thor 1 was just, I don't know. Thor 1 was a convoluted mess that pretty much its only saving grace was its comedic elements. And I could not take the story. I could not take Thor as a character. I did not like Loki in that movie. But in this movie, I like Loki, I like Thor, and I like the story more. It makes more, to me, I think it makes more sense. And it actually involves an Infinity Stone, which interacts more with the larger universe.
That is true. It's the most interactive Thor so far. But, I mean, actually, this is the first Phase 2 film that has to do with Infinity Stone, doesn't it? Because Iron Man 3 didn't.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know. I just thought that was relevant. So this is the second Infinity Stone we've ever seen, the first of which being the Tesseract.
Technically, no.
I know, the Mind Stone, yes, but we don't know that yet.
Technically.
Okay, it's the third one. I'm sorry.
Is that true? Is that it?
Yeah, yeah. Just the Mind Stone and the Tesseract.
Well,
shall we jump in?
I think so. So it starts with a voiceover from Odin, just like the first Thor film. And he tells of the Dark Elves, beings from 5,000 years ago, or was it 5,000 years ago?
This took place 5,000 years ago, but they're from, like, before the universe.
Right, but the actual events are 5,000 years ago.
Which is really weird, because how old is Thor? How old is Odin? You feel like Odin is way older than 5,000 years. I thought he was, like, 10,000 years old. Because I figured Thor is, like, at least 1,000 years old.
Loki actually mentions, like, give or take 5,000 years from human lifespan is how long Asgardians live. But if that's the case, then 5,000 years ago, if Odin's near death, he should have been...
He could have been a baby.
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, or a kid. Bor looked old in that scene also.
I didn't think so. I thought he looked pretty young. His hair wasn't even gray.
You're right. Sorry, it's hard to remember that specifically. He was wearing a helmet the whole time anyways.
Yeah.
With downward horn things.
Indeed. Anyways, the Asgardians went to war with Malekith and the Dark Elves because the Dark Elves wanted to use the ether to bring eternal night upon the universe. And this was during the previous convergence. And then Asgard won, and they took the ether, and the Dark Elves fell. But the Asgardians could not destroy the ether because it's too powerful, so they bury it deep where no one will ever find it.
Which means underground, which was their civilization under a column?
Yeah, it was really... That didn't make any sense.
I don't know why they didn't literally bury it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even though that was kind of a moot point anyways, because Malekith can sense the ether wherever it is, so it doesn't matter where they hide it. They should have put it in Asgard's vault.
I agree. And since since this was before they had the Tesseract, I'm not sure why they didn't.
Yeah. Strange.
But, yeah.
Actually, we don't know if it's before they had the Tesseract. We just know that Earth had it later.
I guess so.
Because Thor was returning the Tesseract to the vault, right? After it had been hidden on Earth for a while?
I don't think they ever made it clear that it was in the vault before.
In Captain America 1, Red Skull mentions that the Tesseract was of Odin's treasure vault, and they found it in, like, a church to Odin. So, oh, yeah. I think it was in his treasure vault in the past, and it got lost on Earth for a few hundred years or something.
How the heck did they lose the Tesseract on Earth?
I don't know. They used to intervene on Earth a lot, apparently.
I'm trying to picture someone holding the Tesseract and managing to lose it.
Whoops!
I just lost one of the most powerful gems in the universe.
Well, to be fair, that was locked on Earth, so they might have left it there on purpose. Like, it was in a vault, it wasn't hidden.
Yeah.
Thor prequel! We need it!
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah. So anyways, shall we return to the present day? With Loki in chains being presented to his father.
Indeed.
Odin is really mean and aggressive in this movie. Like, the only reason why I'm not killing you is because your mother wishes it.
I feel like he's been like that in all the movies, though.
I didn't feel that in Thor 1 at all.
I guess he felt a little more wise in Thor 1.
He seemed wise and kind. And in this movie, he just seemed really aggressive and mean.
I mean, he did banish Thor to Earth in that movie. I didn't feel like he was kind, but...
Well, he then sent the hammer after him, and it was more like a lesson that he needed to learn.
Yeah, it just didn't feel too out of character for me in this one.
He seems bloodthirsty in this one.
How?
Well, maybe bloodthirsty isn't the right word, but, like, just aggressive, like... He doesn't want to listen to anyone else about how to defend the Aether. He'd rather all the Asgardians die than to try another plan. I don't know.
I think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
We are. Sorry.
So anyways, back to the throne room with Loki. Odin says that Frigga's the only reason that Loki's going to stay alive. And that Loki's going to rot in the dungeons forever, and we'll never see Frigga again, even though that's made not true, like, very early on, but whatever.
I don't think that's true, because it might have been Loki's own illusion of Frigga. I was gonna talk about that later when we got to that scene. I don't know if she ever did visit.
Pretty sure that was her visiting.
I'm pretty sure, but I'm not positive. Also, does an illusion count?
I mean, it's still a visit.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
All right. And Thor is now just apparently going and reconciling all of Loki's damage by bringing peace to the other realms?
Yeah, I don't really know what happened to the other realms. One thing I'm really confused about the other realms is, does Asgard rule them? Like, they don't rule the Frost Giants.
Yeah, they do.
Do they? I don't know why Midgard is the only, or Earth, is the only other realm that has, like, advanced civilization and technology on it.
I feel like the idea is just that Asgard is the, like, the peacekeeper and the person in charge. So, in theory, they're, like, the protector of the realms. Like, they're not gonna go and interfere and rule over them directly, but they are going to protect them and stop others from attacking each other, I guess.
Yeah, so why were all the other realms in, like, open rebellion after the Bifrost was gone for a year? Also, how did they repair the Bifrost?
We don't know that, Henry.
Yeah, that's one of the most confusing parts of the entire movie, is how is the Bifrost back?
Let's just ignore that plot thread from Thor 1.
Yeah, we kind of have to. I really wish they touched on that more. It's so confusing to me.
Yeah, I agree. Also, this movie does completely undo, like, the weight of Thor's decision in Thor 1 to break the Bifrost by just having it be totally fine again.
Yeah. And also, it adds on a whole other level of, why wasn't he thinking about protecting the other realms when he made that decision? It was a very immature and reckless thing to do, just to stop Loki from doing, I don't know, he wasn't doing anything that bad in Thor 1 at that point.
He was trying to destroy the Frost Giants.
Oh yeah, but is that really that bad?
It's just genocide. It's just the one thing in the movie they were like, this is the worst thing, don't do this.
They were clearly evil. Did you see, Laffy?
That's actually a point I have in this movie, but I'll talk about it when we get to it.
All right. One other thing I wanted to mention, since we were talking about them being the protector of all the realms, we learned that the Asian guy of the Warriors 3 is from Vanaheim, that place that they were fighting in the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, I was actually confused by that, because all we see is a bunch of beasts fighting there, and I'm like, how is this Asian dude from here, and why is he not Asgardian, and why is he on Thor's team, and what?
Yeah, I really wish we learned more about this. I really want more lore about Thor. I really want a Thor prequel. I just want more stuff about the Asgardians.
Yeah.
So many mysteries! To be fair, though, the Warriors 3 get very little screen time in this movie. Anyways, they just help Thor escape later on.
That's funny. I actually disagree, because I feel like they get the most screen time in this movie than they have out of any of the three Thor movies.
That's true. But it's still less than I thought I remembered.
They don't have much of a role in any of the movies, so it's kind of sad that they're there in the first place, but
I know. I just want Lady Sif to be in there more.
But I do like the development that we get of them in this movie, and it makes me a little sadder that they don't get justice in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose you're right. They definitely do get the most screen time in this movie. But again, I really just want to know why Asgard and Midgard are the only ones with, like, legitimate civilizations, where the other people are living in, like, ice caves or tents.
I mean, they're not the only ones. We only see two others.
True. I wish we saw more. There's so much lore.
That's my biggest gripe with the early Thor movies, again, is that we never learn any backstory to Asgard, to any of this planetary system and how it works.
Yeah, and it only gets worse with the convergence when all the nine realms align, which, what?
What?
I don't like the convergence.
What's wrong with the convergence, Henry?
It makes no sense.
They converged.
sure, Trey.
I mean, I don't really know. I don't know what it's supposed to be, but I don't really care because it works for the movie.
I don't like it. It doesn't make sense. It bothers me. Meh.
Okay.
Well, anyways, we go back to Asgard. You find yourself on Asgard. What do you do?
I remembered! Yes!
Oh, I'm so excited. I love Asgard's theme when he comes in back to Asgard and it's the super triumphant theme. That's one of the best parts of Thor to me.
Cool. Yeah, so we have a little bit of talk between Odin and Thor. And Odin naturally points to Thor's heartache and basically says, "You should be with Sif. Humans are fleeting and Jane will be dead in like one of your breaths since we live way longer."
Yeah, also Sif is awesome and Jane is the worst. So it's the correct thing to do.
So Odin agrees with us.
Yep.
And then we cut to Jane on her date with some random dude. Which Darcy crashes to be like, "Yo, your equipment is doing weird things."
This date is really funny. Jane is just so awkward and bad at dating, but it was amusing. But also, Darcy comments on Jane working out of her mom's house / lab, but they're in London. Does Jane's mom live in London?
I was really confused if they were already in London or if they went to London because of the readings.
They were. The restaurant was, like, in London, and you could see the London Eye in the background, I think.
Why were they in London?
Because that's where the convergence readings were spiking.
This was before that.
No, they were already there for that reason.
But the equipment was doing all the weird readings, which is why Darcy was like, "Jane, look, weird
stuff." It was doing more weird things. It's like how they were in New Mexico at the beginning of Thor, and then more things happened. Also, why were they in New Mexico to begin with? I don't know.
I thought they lived there.
No, they were doing research there because of some kind of cosmic stuff.
Okay. Anyways.
Darcy has her own intern, Ian. I love that she has her own intern. Darcy is the best part of Thor.
Yeah, too. Jane's intern has an intern. I think that's hilarious. And I also really like Ian, so there's that.
Yep. He's just there and great.
But we also cut to Eric running around naked as a crazy person and
at Stonehenge.
This is probably the thing that bothers me most about this movie.
It bothers you? Why?
Are you serious?
No, yeah, I'm asking, why does it bother you? It's, like, just weird and strange, but why does it bother you?
I mean, it's super unnecessary, it's cheap and played for laughs, and it doesn't make any sense because none of the other people who are brainwashed are having these problems.
Yeah, that's the weirdest thing. Like, I don't understand why he's going nuts and the other ones aren't.
Yeah, and it, like, takes this character who was semi-respectable and just reduces him to, "I'm crazy with no pants, look at me! I'm so funny, laughable, at my expense."
Yeah. And he was, like, a cool father figure in the first Thor. Like, I really liked that scene of him going drinking with Thor.
Yeah.
And them becoming bros.
Yeah. So.
It's just weird.
That. But, yeah.
Yeah. Then we cut to Jane and Darcy and Ian finding some weird scientific anomalies with portals and gravity. And the effects are really cool here, like the floating truck.
And I thought the premise was interesting of, let me drop this bottle and it'll just keep dropping until it suddenly drops no more.
Except that is funny that, like, sometimes they don't come back and, like, Ian throws the car keys in a later scene. That's really funny.
Yeah.
However, I don't like that they dropped the bottle and it kept falling, 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 and then the kid caught it with no issue. They clearly don't understand how portals work, because that would be going so fast that would have broken his hand. Really badly. It would have reached terminal velocity, Trey.
Science. And
science! That's why I don't like the convergence and this and
Superhero logic, Henry.
This isn't superhero logic. This is just dumb.
You don't go to superhero movies for the science.
They don't know how to do science with portals. There's a portal reference here, and I'm forgetting what it is.
So, Jane, like, randomly goes through a portal and happens to show up at the ether?
We should mention that she's pulled into it.
Right.
Which is strange. Which, maybe gravity was just going down in the wrong direction? It's just dumb luck. that she ended up on the Dark World.
It definitely... this is the most convenient part of the movie, which is kind of odd.
Oh, look, she happens to pop through a portal exactly next to the Aether, which was buried. No, it's under a column.
Yeah.
Glowing bright red.
Not hidden at all.
Yeah, who would not have been able to find this?
So, yeah, but she gets infected and Malekith wakes up. I'm guessing because the convergence is happening and he, like, wanted to wake up at that time.
Yeah, when I first saw this scene again, I first thought Malekith was waking up because the Aether had, like, an energy spike. But it's what you said. It was just because the convergence was coming soon and he had to get ready for it. And he set his alarm to make sure he had enough time to get the Aether again before the convergence.
Yeah, he just felt like sleeping for 5,000 years.
I mean, he had to wait till the next convergence, so he might as well just sleep through it.
I mean, I guess if there's no point to living and all you want to do is cause the universe to be in darkness, then you might as well sleep through 5,000 years.
Maybe to them, living in the light is pain. I don't know, man. It seems like it. They hate the light.
Yeah.
They're elves. Don't you know anything about elves, Trey?
Not dark elves. And then Heimdall tells Thor that he can't see Jane. So Thor goes down to her after she disappears for 5 hours.
Speaking of which, apparently Thor was hanging out with Heimdall for like an hour every night just staring at Jane or something. He had plenty of time to go visit her. Why didn't he go visit her? Did he just feel bad for being gone for so long?
He did say that he talked about how because she's human and he's not, he felt like it wasn't the right choice for her since they live like planets apart, and it just didn't, he didn't think it was good. But then because she was infected by the Aether, now he thinks that they're fated to be together because he was drawn back to her.
Did he say that? I thought he just said he was too busy bringing peace to all the realms again.
He did say that too.
Oh, I don't remember. I didn't remember the part you just said. Oh, that makes way more sense.
Yeah, so he goes back to Jane and she's like, slap! And...
double slap!
And he's like, yo, I was gone because I was waging war and saving people. And she's like, oh, well, okay then.
I hate their chemistry. It's so bad. I like that Darcy interrupts them, though, because we get to deal with her more and not them as much, because Darcy is the best.
Yeah, but then Jane's going to get arrested for trespassing, but then the Aether explodes around her and Thor takes her to Asgard.
Yep. Because apparently now Jane is a bomb. Whee!
I mean, I don't know if you'd call it a bomb, but sure.
Force field generator thingamabobber.
It's more like the Aether just excels force around her when it's threatened.
Yeah, yeah.
Same
yeah.
as every other Infinity Stone.
Yeah.
So we get to see some cool magical tech in Asgard, which, again, this is one of the things I like more about the sequel, is that we do see more of Asgard, even if it's not as much as I would want. We get to see some of their technology in, like, their 3D magical scans of Jane's body. We get to see their whole... we get to see their whole palace, and we get fight scenes there, and just a lot of cool things in Asgard over Earth, which I prefer more than Earth.
Except Jane won't shut up. Oh, it's a quantum field generator? Oh, yeah, shut up, Jane. We don't care. Also, we see them using guns and lasers and stuff later in this movie, and it's kind of weird that they never arm their soldiers with lasers or guns, because they're clearly effective.
When do we see lasers or guns?
They have turrets to fend off from ships. And their chariot ships also have lasers on them. Or guns, whatever.
I don't remember.
The reason why it really stands out to me is later on, when the Dark Elves are invading Asgard, they use a bunch of lasers against Asgardian soldiers and black hole grenades or something. And the Asgardians are defenseless against the lasers in those. Why don't they use lasers and cool tech like that?
That is a good question.
Yeah, they also had 5,000 years of technological advancement since they last fought the Dark Elves. You'd think they'd be better.
Odin does have something like that, because he has, like, a staff that propels energy like Loki does.
Yeah, he has, like, a beam scepter, which I just assumed was something that him as a royal has, like how Thor has his hammer, and Loki also has a scepter.
Yeah, I don't know why the royals get those, and all the fighters just get, like... random spears and swords, but
I'm guessing it's a manifestation of their own power. Like, Thor manipulating lightning has to do with him being powerful inherently, not just him wielding weapons that manipulate lightning.
Yeah, which is another question of...
what are Asgardians? What are their power levels? Is it over 9,000? Exactly.
Is it only the royal people that have powers? Because, yeah, what?
And then we get Heimdall, and then what more? Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, so Odin comes in and is like, she doesn't belong here. Take her back. But then the ether explodes again, and Odin's like, JK.
And then Odin saith, let the woman stay.
And, yeah. But we find out that Jane, or they also say Jane won't survive the energy surging within her. And Odin explains the ether with his handy-dandy golden book. And he talks about how while the other Infinity Stones are stones, the ether is fluid and ever-changing. Which I don't really know why, but he also says it turns matter into dark matter. I have no idea what that means.
I mean, if you turn matter into dark matter, you can make really awesome spaceships? I don't know. They never actually talk about that. And they never bring up dark matter again after this moment. And dark matter wouldn't make the universe dark, if that's what they're trying to imply. Dark matter is just like normal matter with the opposite charge and annihilates with matter. It's complicated.
So what...
I don't know why they said that in this movie.
So what does that mean? What would happen if you turn matter into dark matter?
If you touch a particle of matter with a particle, the same equivalent particle of antimatter together, they annihilate, which means they both explode and their pure energy is released.
Okay.
So that wouldn't make a dark universe, that would make a not universe if you converted half the universe to dark energy. If you converted half the universe to dark matter.
So it would just release a bunch of energy?
Yes, and eventually I think it would recoalesce into matter. I don't know, I should research the Big Bang some more.
So maybe the point was that releasing all the energy would destroy the entire universe, and that was what Malekith was trying to do?
I don't think so. He just wanted the universe to be dark again. But also, the Dark Elves existed before the universe, which I don't really understand what that means.
But he also says, like, everything will die and the universe will be reborn.
I don't know. It's confusing. It doesn't make any sense.
I certainly don't explain it well, but...
Not at all. Just, I don't know. It's going to destroy everything. Woo!
Odin also says that the ether seeks out host bodies, drawing strength from their life force, which I really don't understand why that's necessary when it's an Infinity Stone.
Yeah. A stone of infinite power, essentially. I don't get it.
Like, I clearly need to infect a human and take their life force.
They just wanted an excuse to add an Infinity Stone to the movie.
I think they wanted an excuse and they wanted to put Jane in a damsel position.
Yeah, they just needed a reason for Jane to even be involved. Because that's the thing, she doesn't seem like she needs to be in this movie at all.
I think that's exactly it, yeah.
Yeah. Later on, when Thor and Loki are escaping in the Dark Elf ship, Jane is just, like, off to the side, being ignored the entire time because she's not an interesting character. Thor and Loki's interactions are funny. Thor and Jane's are boring.
Yeah, but...
Yes, she's weakened, but she's just not interesting. If she was funny, they wouldn't have put her in that state.
No, I agree. She's not an interesting character, the way that they've written her. I am very curious, though, how the heck Thanos is going to use this stone. Like, how do you use this fluid stone thing?
I don't know. I mean, the Tesseract has, like, a different stone inside the cube, so maybe you can extract a real stone out of the aether.
Wait, what? The Tesseract has a stone inside the cube?
Yeah, just like the Mind Stone is the thing inside the gem.
No, the Mind Stone was inside the staff.
Oh, sorry. The Mind Stone was inside the staff. The Tesseract, like, the Infinity Stone in the Tesseract is inside the cube.
I thought the cube was the stone.
I don't think so. I think there's a scene in one of the movies, I'm not sure which movie, where that's like a stone pops out of the Tesseract and the stone pops out. It's probably Age of Ultron, to be honest.
I don't recall ever seeing a stone pop out of the Tesseract.
I think that's true, but I'm not 100% certain. But anyways, that's information for a later movie. I don't know how the Aether works exactly either, but it'll probably just coalesce onto the Infinity Gauntlet.
Coalesce?
Coalesce?
I'm just picturing the stone coalescing onto the gauntlet. I don't even know.
I don't know. Apparently a search is for a host body, not a host gauntlet, so who knows?
Yeah. So, anyways, Odin also says that his father stopped the Dark Elves by murdering the entire race, and Thor's like, are you sure? And he's like, yes, I'm certain, I'm 100% sure, or something to that extent.
Just like he was 100% sure that the Aether was destroyed.
Yeah, and I really don't get it, like... So, in Thor 1, genocide is the worst thing ever, but in this movie, they act like exterminating the entire race of Dark Elves is good, and that that should happen.
I mean, it wasn't Odin, it was Bor.
Right. But the way they talk about it just seems like, yes, that's the right thing to do.
This is part of why I think Odin is, like, darker and crueler in this movie.
Yeah, that part just...
Also, he's just a dick to Jane.
That part just doesn't make much sense, the whole, like, genocide is fine for the Dark Elves. And I get that they're an evil race, and maybe a single Dark Elf alive would cause the end of the universe at some point, I guess.
Trey, a lot of this movie doesn't make sense.
Henry, a lot of all the movies don't make sense.
Lies!
But we cut to Loki in jail, and his mom is visiting with her own magical illusion.
Yes, Frigga knows magic too.
I don't know if you have anything to say about this. The next note I have is Jane meets Frigga.
I don't really have much to say about that engagement, other than the fact that because Frigga was an illusion, it's possible Loki actually made a fake Frigga, and he's just going mad. It's unlikely, but you could read it that way if you want, I think.
I think the movie makes it pretty evident that it's his mom visiting him, so I don't know why you are saying that.
I don't know. It didn't seem confirmed to me.
Especially since we get to see more of her illusion powers in this movie, and she follows through by making other illusions later and stuff. So, like, this seemed like the first one.
Yeah. Well, anyways, before Jane meets Frigga, Jane and Thor have an intimate moment where Jane's like, I like the way you explain things. Which is just like the weird roof scene on Thor 1, where they're having these weird intimate moments that aren't really actually intimate at all. It's just Thor giving an explanation to the audience of what's going on. And Jane being like, oh my god, you're so attractive and I love you. For no good reason. It's like someone falling in love with the narrator of a movie. Like, what is going on?
Hey, Frigga loves Odin. He was narrating.
True. But Odin has this beautiful voice. To be fair, so does Thor.
Yeah.
But Odin is very good at telling old legends.
It's funny because I almost wrote that same exact note down, but I was like, it's kind of romantic in the music, so I'm just gonna... And he's saying it all romantically.
It's just very strange that they wanted to develop this relationship, but never give it a chance to be a relationship. They always keep it connected the scenes that are plot relevant.
Sure.
Like, they only talk about the plot. They never talk about themselves, other than in the very beginning where Jane's like, why were you gone? And slaps him twice.
Eh, whatever.
Even that's plot relevant.
So, anyways, somehow the Dark Elf gets brought into the prison, and I'm not really sure how.
I think the idea behind it is one of the Dark Elves impersonated one of the rebels on Vanaheim. And got taken as a prisoner, and they didn't know he was a Dark Elf because he had a mask on.
That's what I was wondering, so...
And then he used the Berserker stuff, which I thought kills you really quickly after you use it, but apparently I forgot, and it doesn't. It just makes you lose your mind.
Yeah. Magic rocks!
Berserker Elf, here comes the action! He breaks out of the magical prison and frees everyone except for Loki, and now there's chaos on Asgard!
Yeah, and we get to see Heimdall in action for the first time, which is really cool, because he...
Oh my god.
He jumps onto a cloaked Dark Elf ship and takes it down.
That was so cool, except it was only the one small ship, and the mothership was behind.
Yep.
Dun dun dun!
And, yeah, because the bigger ship invades. And to be honest, I was wondering why they don't have some kind of communicative device where he can be like, Odin, bad things are happening.
I don't know. It's like how they don't give their soldiers weapons, but they have turrets to stop alien invading spaceships.
Yeah, but then they, Heimdall can also talk to anyone, anywhere, so.
Yeah, and hear anyone, anywhere, so he just doesn't. Well, it's not really important at that time, because they figure out they're being invaded pretty quickly.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, I don't know. Maybe Odin already knew. I don't really know. Whatever. Yeah, so Heimdall creates, like, a shield around the castle, but the beast just wrecks it from inside.
Using the same sword as the Bifrost sword. This is a pretty powerful sword, and I would love to know more about it.
I know. Just give us all the information. We can handle it. The elves cause a lot of destruction, and I personally find this scene, like, pretty intense and exciting.
The spaceships are super cool. I really like their how they just keep rotating. I like that.
And the elves throwing implosion bombs is pretty interesting.
Yeah, the implosion black hole grenades are pretty sweet. Except for the fact of, this is technology that they've had for at least 5,000 years since they were in hibernation the entire time. You'd think the Asgardians would be more aware of it. Well, to be fair, the common soldier probably didn't expect a dark elf invasion, but you think they would have better tech.
They do have better tech. That's why it doesn't really...
They don't have black hole grenades?
I mean...
Most of their soldiers fight with swords and shields, or spears.
I'm saying the Asgardians do have better tech than swords and spears, though. They just...
But they never use
Don't use it because it ruins the aesthetic or something.
Yeah. One thing that's weird about the one ship that breaks through and lands in the throne room is Malkith just happened to be on that specific one, even though many of them were shot down and all of them were trying to break into the throne room. That seems a little convenient.
If you say so.
I thought it was a little weird.
I didn't notice that at all. But Malkith goes for Jane and has to fight Frigga.
And Frigga almost kicks his ass 1v1. That was badass.
Seriously, go Frigga. I'm like, I'm so sad. I'm so, so sad that she shows how badass she is right before she gets killed.
Right? Like, she uses magic. She shows that she's good with swords. And she doesn't go for the finishing blow and then gets killed by the rage elf.
And it's because she's, like, one of the few strong female characters we've gotten so far, and she immediately dies.
But it was super cool.
Yeah. Though the question that I do have from this is, Malekith can sense where the ether is. So how does he think that that illusion of Jane is actually her and he went straight for it?
Yeah. Good point. I didn't even think about that.
That's like the one thing with the ether and Malekith that bothered me.
But Jane was hiding in like the same room.
No, she wasn't.
Wasn't she just behind a column nearby?
Wasn't she in a different room?
She appears in, like, the next scene when Thor comes in, too, and, like, electrifies Malekith's face.
I think she was in a different room, though.
Either way, she was close by. Maybe Malekith can only sense, like, a general location?
Maybe, but he knew Jane had it?
Good point. Why did he know that?
Exactly. That's exactly the question.
Yeah. Because Jane's special and amazing, and she's the best love interest in all of the MCU.
But the one thing I do have to say about Frigga's death, even though I'm very, like, sad that it happened, is that at least it has weight. And I think this is actually probably something overlooked by most Marvel fans, because everyone talks about how there's no stakes in the movies until, like, other deaths later.
Yeah, but she didn't really have impact until she died. That's the problem. She didn't do very much until then.
But her death had emotional weight to it, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. And the Viking funeral was really cool.
Yeah.
Space Vikings!
The funeral was very sentimental and had made me feel emotions.
Yeah.
And then we get Stanley's cameo.
In the old people crazy home? Is it a crazy people home or an old people home or both?
Yeah. It must be a crazy prison home, though, since Eric has to be checked out.
Yeah, it's like a prison, so I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah,
but yeah, whatever. That's Stan Lee's cameo. He just wants his shoe back.
Yep. And Asgard is shown as defenseless because they can't restore their shields, and a warrior says that they'll be sitting ducks if they're attacked.
Yeah. Well, a lot of damage was done, and a lot of soldiers were killed.
Yeah. And Thor and Odin fight about it, because they apparently do that in every movie, about which one of them is right.
And Odin's like, we're going to keep defending the Aether here, even if every Asgardian dies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's as clear-cut who's in the wrong at this point, because Thor wants to take Jane straight to the Dark World to Malekith so that Malekith can pull the Aether out of her, and then Thor plans to destroy it and Malekith at the same time. And Odin even says that's way too risky of putting this super powerful weapon in the wrong hands, which is exactly what happens, because the Aether can't be destroyed.
Odin was totally correct. The only problem that I have with this is those aren't the only two options. Malekith needs the Aether by the time of the convergence. Put it on a ship and bail. Just hide. If you can hide for a week, he loses, and you have another 5,000 years of peace.
But he can sense the...
Yeah, so keep moving. They're not traveling by Frost. They're traveling by ship. They're not infinitely fast.
I guess so.
Yeah, that seems like the correct action. They should have just been hiding it.
But that's not addressed as an option, so let's get back to the options they are presenting. So Odin's plan is to wait in Asgard and let them come to them and attack. But Thor says that this will destroy Asgard because they're defenseless. And Odin says, well, they'll fall on Asgardian blades. And Thor says, how many of ours will have to die on theirs? And Odin's like, as many as needed.
Which would probably be all of them.
Yeah. But I do like that it's not clear who's in the right, even though I feel like the movie wants us to think Thor's in the right.
Even though he's proven later to not be in the right.
Yeah, exactly. But
they were stuck between a rock and a hard place, and my idea was the out.
Indeed. So anyways... Thor asks Heimdall to comply in treason.
Oh yeah, it's time for Mission Impossible. Can we escape from Asgard? Thor and Heimdall and the Warriors 3 and Sif all meet up to escape Asgard, to go to the Dark World and fulfill Thor's plan.
Because Loki is the only person who knows another way out of Asgard, so they need him.
You really would think Heimdall would know, wouldn't you?
You'd think, yeah, right? You'd think.
I don't know. I don't know how Loki found out about this knowledge, but it seems like very good knowledge to have.
I also think it's kind of funny that in both movies, Thor and Odin have a fight about, like, completely different viewpoints about what they should do. Yeah, Thor goes and does what he wants anyway against Odin's wishes. And then in the first one, Odin punishes him for it. And then the second one, Odin rewards him for it.
It wasn't Odin who rewarded him for it. It was Loki.
That's true, yeah.
We'll talk more about that scene later on.
Yeah.
I have feelings.
Yeah. Anyways, Thor offers Loki a chance of vengeance to the person who killed their mother, so Loki goes along with him.
We should probably mention the, like, infamous scene of Loki pretending to be all right about Frigga's death, and then showing the truth that he's utterly devastated by it.
Yeah, that.
So then our Mission Impossible to escape Asgard begins. And I love that Loki pulls that Captain America joke out.
I know, it's so great.
That was beautiful. Also making Thor Sif for a minute is also funny.
Yeah, and we get a Chris Evans cameo. It, like, super unexpectedly.
So good. That's one of the best cameos in the entire MCU.
Yeah, I also think the editing is done really well, going back and forth between their plan room, where the Warriors 3 and Thor are discussing how to do everything, and then actually carrying it out.
Yeah, and I like how they skip Robin Hood's step, because it's funnier.
What?
The blonde guy, I always call him Robin Hood, because I don't remember his real name, but when Thor pushes Loki out of the ship, they skipped him explaining that step because it was funnier. Yeah, I know. This is the first time I mentioned Robin Hood in the entire movie. I don't know his real name. I just know his actor was changed in this movie.
Yeah.
But I never noticed until it was pointed out to me.
Oh, I noticed because I knew the first guy.
Oh, okay.
The first guy's on Once Upon a Time.
Cool.
And is also way more attractive. But anyways. So Heimdall calls Odin while Thor's plan is happening just to tell him, or just to inform him of his own treason.
Which is really funny. Except he could just say, Thor is committing treason. He doesn't have to say, I am committing treason. But it's still really funny.
It is funny, but it's also, like, why that... I feel like he could have distracted him a little better. Like, if that's all his goal was to call him there to distract him.
I mean, his goal was to get him out of the castle so that he couldn't stop Thor himself. I thought it was a good job. Good idea.
But it's done in time for all of Odin's soldiers to still go after Thor. Like,
there's just other soldiers still back there. He didn't summon the entire army to the Bifrost.
No, but Heimdall could have kept Odin busy for a few minutes instead of like, Odin, I summoned you here to report treason. Who's mine? Go stop Thor! It could have been like, Odin, I have a matter to discuss with you. Spends a few minutes distracting him instead of instantly telling him the plan.
Good point. I guess Thor didn't actually need that much time to get into a Dark Elf ship, so he only needed to get him out of the castle. Now it's enough.
Yeah. It was just something I thought about.
Yeah, that's really funny.
But we do get to see the warriors defend as Thor and Loki escape with Jane, which, again, just does more justice to the warriors than we've seen so far.
And they also all threaten Loki about betrayal. Though, side note, why did they make Sif rescue Jane? That's just mean.
It is mean, yeah.
That was just mean. Oh, it's a girl. You should send the girl to get the other girl. It's like, no, don't. You're breaking Sif's heart. That's so cruel.
I don't know why they had her do it.
Girls. They just put the girls together.
That's not a reason.
I think that was their reason.
How's that a reason?
Which is annoying, because Sif seems to be the best fighter of all of them. They should have swapped her with the... I don't know what his name is. The really big guy that I just called the dwarf, even though he's not a dwarf. But he plays the same role as a dwarf.
I mean, I thought that's why they sent her, because she would be the most useful in taking down the guards next to Jane to get Jane out.
Ah, good point. But they all had to fight guards. But she took them out really fast, I suppose.
It is a pretty ballsy treason, though, since Thor was banished last time he did this.
Yeah.
But the dynamic between Thor and Loki while they're flying out is hilarious, and I love it.
It is pretty great, and I also like that they, as I said earlier, just totally ignore Jane the entire time, because Jane doesn't really apply anything to their dynamic.
I mean...
Oh yeah, she does slap Loki, though.
She was asleep, so who cares?
Yeah. Jane hits Loki. This is for New York! Yeah, is that really all he deserves, a slap?
Apparently.
And a year in prison?
And then Thor pushes Loki out of the ship, which was great.
Yeah, that was really funny. And I'm glad that that's the one scene that they didn't tell us about in advance when they were talking about the whole escape plan. That was well handled.
Yes. Also, I realized that Thor is pretty smart in this movie, since I've previously... Well, since in our special I've addressed the fact that I don't think Thor was... smart in the previous movies before Ragnarok, but this showed me that I was wrong.
Yeah, he does do some clever things, although tricking Loki into handcuffs was awkward, because that's not how you trick someone into handcuffs. You don't say like, oh yeah, here's a sword, and then you're like, oh wait, I'm in handcuffs, how did this happen? Like, that just didn't make sense.
I don't know, I didn't really care.
It was also kind of unnecessary, but yeah. Like, Loki did want revenge. Just let him go. Or imprison him. I don't know. It was strange.
Whatever.
So, thanks to the Warriors 3, Sif and Heimdall, Thor, Loki, and Jane escape to the Dark World.
Yeah, so I guess we're supposed to take this as Loki just knew that there was a hidden portal in this random whole thing.
I don't know. I thought this is the portal he used to get to Earth, but he used it to get to the Dark World. So does this portal work for all realms? Because they get stuck on the Dark World later on without a way to get back to Earth. But then the convergence causes a portal to open up so that they could get back to Earth. So, well, I don't know how Loki got to Earth.
I think...
Or anything.
I mean, Loki didn't go straight from Asgard to Earth. He went to Thanos first.
Oh, yeah, good point. Though, so he fell off Asgard and then sneaked back on and then went through a portal that I think you need a ship for?
I think they were talking about the... I think they were talking about the portal because Loki snuck the frost giants through into Asgard.
Oh! Yes, that makes way more sense. I forgot about that.
Yeah. But...
Smart.
Yeah, so I don't know how this portal works and what if it just goes wherever, but I guess it's a hidden portal in this random side place that Loki only knows about. Whatever.
Yeah, that's what it seems to be.
I don't know why Heimdall doesn't know about it. I don't know why anyone else doesn't know about it. I don't know how Loki knows about it, but that's what we have.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they call it the Dark World instead of Svartalfheim or whatever, because I can't pronounce it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Svartalfheim.
Svartalfheim?
I don't know. I was just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
But then we see Darcy picking up Eric from the crazy home, I guess.
Yeah, it's funny how Ian pretends to be his son because he doesn't know how to act and he's just really awkward and it's funny. Eric is now a free man again. A free man who's free not to wear pants.
And we cut to the Dark World. So Malekith says the Aethers come home, which honestly just made me wonder, like, considering his relationship with the Aether and how he can sense it so much, and that he's saying that the Aethers come home to the Dark World, is it originally from here or something?
Which doesn't make any sense because they're from before the universe, and the Infinity Stones, I think, were made with the universe? I don't really understand what's going on with the Aether and the Dark Elves.
I thought the Infinity Stones were also before the universe.
Maybe they are. But does that mean this planet was before the universe? I don't really understand.
I don't really understand how the Dark Elves could exist before the universe either, because how?
That's, yeah. It's confusing. They do say, like, before there was light, they existed, and you could say that maybe they meant that the era of the universe before there was light, but at that point there weren't planets, I think. So, I don't know. The universe was early on like a haze of particles, and then eventually giant stars were formed, so there wasn't really a good time to have a planet with a civilization of elves. I don't really know what's going on. Science! Was that too much science, Trey?
No, it's just so ridiculous, the whole Dark Elf thing. Just like, what does that even mean before the what? Whatever.
Also, does that mean there's regular elves?
I was wondering if these were the elves or if there were other elves. Yeah. It's a weird name for a race that they're just called the Dark Elves. But
yeah.
Well, also just Malekith can pull the Aether out of Jane, but the Asgardians can't, and no one else can. And I don't know why Malekith can. I don't know why he can control the Aether. I don't get it.
I don't either. Because he also doesn't seem very powerful as an individual. For one, Frigga almost beat him 1v1. Though you could say maybe he was going easy because he knew the Rage Elf was about to come. But still, physically, he doesn't seem very strong.
He's not.
His power is being connected to the Aether. Maybe that's his superpower. I can find something more powerful than me.
Why do these movies never give us backstory? I don't understand.
I don't know. I really don't know.
Anyways, we see their big plan where Loki betrays Thor and chops off his hand for a Star Wars reference like they do in many of the MCU movies.
Yeah, they did it in Iron Man 3 also, and this is a thing they did in all the Phase 2 movies.
Did they stop at Phase 2?
Yeah, it was a Phase 2 thing. Although I don't think they did it in Ant-Man. Ant-Man is like Phase 2.5.
Well, I guess we'll find out when we get there.
Indeed.
Yeah, he chops off Thor's hand, and he gives Jane as a gift to Malekith so that Malekith takes the Aether out of Jane. And then we find out that it's all actually a clever ruse because Thor's like, Loki, now! And they reveal that it was all an illusion. And then Thor lightnings the Aether and it explodes, but it doesn't actually die. because it's the ether and an infinity stone and it can't die, and it gets absorbed into Malekith exactly like we didn't want to happen.
Yeah, also, when it was all exploded, the shards were like shards, not liquid, which was interesting. It looks more like a stone when it isn't a full thing. It kind of reminds me of Full Metal Alchemist and Philosopher's Stones. But I don't know, it looked pretty.
I'm honestly really confused why Malekith isn't way more powerful with the Aether's power at his disposal.
He makes like sandstorms or something, and like energy bursts.
So the Aether's supposed to be the reality gem. And I was actually talking to people on Reddit the other day who were talking about the Infinity Stones and like the different powers. And they were saying that the reality gem basically allows you to change the laws of the universe and science itself. So you could like delete gravity or...
I mean, it did delete gravity in a few sections and make portals, which technically break physics.
It didn't make portals.
But it was the convergence.
Yeah, the convergence did that. It wasn't the ether.
I don't know, so, man.
Pretty much all Malekith did was fire energy beams.
Energy bursts.
And he was going...
And make like a sandstorm.
He was going to use the ether to bring darkness to the universe, but he didn't actually use it against any person, and he didn't alter reality in any way. So I don't...
Also, I don't know why the convergence was necessary to do that, since the convergence only connects 9 worlds when you're trying to convert the entire universe.
That's why...
I mean, it helps, Thor's... but it doesn't seem like enough.
Thor's movies are confusing because they make it seem like there's only 9 realms, but the Guardians and other movies show that that's not true.
Yep, not even close.
So, yeah, I don't know. Woo. The reality gem is very poorly used in this movie.
I agree.
And I really hope they show it better in Infinity War, though it will make this movie even worse if they show it better.
They probably will. Well, after they fail, Malekith gets on his ship to go to Earth, because Earth/Midgard is the center of the convergence, so that's where he wants to do his plan, which makes the intro scene, which makes the legend that's told in the beginning a little bit weird, because you think it would take place on Earth, not on the Dark World.
A few things that happen in this... in the fight on the Dark World that I think are interesting are that Loki saves Jane, first of all.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know why he would do that.
Definitely pretty notable.
And he also saves Thor, because Thor is about to be killed.
Yeah. And he's the one who kills the Rage Elf, not Thor.
Yeah. Though, I was more commenting on the fact that he's supposed to be, like, the villain, but he saves Jane, who he seems to want to murder to hurt Thor, and he saves Thor.
Don't underestimate his quest for vengeance.
What does that have to do with his quest for vengeance?
I don't know. Also, maybe this was all part of his plan because he knew that he was going to fake die to become the King of Asgard at the end of the movie.
But
it didn't look fake.
It would have worked better if Thor died, don't you think?
Probably.
Or Jane and Thor was heartbroken. I don't know.
I did find it interesting that they use this Rage Elf as like a mini boss, kind of like the Destroyer in Thor 1. Like a random, mindless, super strong enemy.
Yeah. Well, really quick, just back on the Loki thing. I felt like it was worth...
Yeah, sure.
I felt like it was worth noting because... I don't know, I guess it still shows some deeper sense of Loki's character. Unless it's just meant to be inconsistent writing, which it's really hard to tell with Loki since he's so...
It probably is.
He's so mischievous that his plans either make no sense, but they are hidden through his cloak of mischief, or...
Yeah, I'm putting it on bad writing.
But it feels like it's something to do with his morality and shifting morality.
Well, Loki's morality has been a big theme of all the Thor movies and the Avengers, like, all the movies he's in, where he began as a jealous prince who just wanted to become king instead of his big brother who was destined to take the throne, to his rage about it, to now his kind of understanding of Thor being more worthy, but he's still really angry at it.
Yeah. but not too angry to save Jane and Thor.
Yeah.
I guess.
Maybe it was because Frigga's last dying action was saving Jane. So protecting Jane ensured that his mother didn't die in vain.
That.
I feel like that's actually a good reason.
That is a good reason. Good job, Henry.
Yay! Thank you. I have solved this movie. Well, before we jump back to Earth, I did want to mention that the Rage Elf was able to deflect Thor's hammer, which is really impressive and doesn't really make sense to me.
Yeah, I have...
Like, he just smacked it away while it was flying at Thor.
I thought the same thing, and I don't know how he would have done that, because nobody can touch that thing that's not worthy, or, like, move its momentum.
Yeah, I was impressed. It was strange.
I'm not sure what the logic is supposed to be behind that, and I feel like it's inconsistency.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's sad. Loki is dead. We are all sad. And they're like, well, everything has now failed. Malekith has the Aether. Loki is dead. We're stuck in the Dark World. This is the worst. And then they're like, what do we do? How are we going to get out of here? Which, none of this makes any sense, because Heimdall should have been able to see what was going on. And Odin probably would have wanted to use the Bifrost to get Loki and Thor back, since he knew exactly where they were going.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really know why any of this happened. But then Jane finds her phone, and the car keys, and a portal, and pops back on Earth again. Very convenient.
Well, you forgot to say that she actually gets a call from her cell phone.
Yeah. Awkward date guy calls it
on a different planet. So that was actually pretty funny, and like,
that was really funny. Clever. I like the awkward date guy,
but
it's like, I don't know, I liked our date even though you didn't talk, because apparently people fall in love with Jane for no good reason.
Yeah, seems to be a thing.
Yeah, Jane, she's just so dreamy.
Uh-huh. So,
wait, my favorite part of the movie occurs in the next scene, when they go to Jane's mom's house / the lab, when Thor hangs his hammer on the coat rack. Beautiful. I love that moment.
That was your favorite scene? He's
trying to be very, it's not, but it's amazing. It's just beautiful.
Okay.
I love scenes like that, when Thor's like trying to work with human customs with Mjolnir. And he's like so clumsy, but not at the same time. I don't know. It's just hilarious to me.
Yeah, it was funny.
Also, what was funny was Erik Selvig asking Thor about Loki, and Thor's like, Loki is dead. And Erik's like, oh, thank God. That was beautiful.
Yeah.
Because they should be happy he's dead. He terrorized Earth. Many people have died.
Indeed. But at that time, we cut back to cloaked version of Loki going to tell Odin that Loki is dead.
So, Loki pretends to be a guard who found Loki and reports it to Odin. But all that is unnecessary because Heimdall exists. Heimdall could be like, I found Loki. He's dead. But maybe Heimdall's in prison right now. Either way, I don't know what's going on.
But also, Loki isn't dead and Heimdall wouldn't see it, so.
Yeah, but also, how did this guard get to the Dark World and back if Heimdall couldn't open the Bifrost? And if Heimdall opened the Bifrost, he was looking at the Dark World and he probably would have found Loki's body. It's just a very strange thing of, why was there a guard there? How did he get there? Why didn't Heimdall know what was going on? Like, I don't understand.
I feel like there was something in this that explained this, because I had the same question, but I felt like it was answered.
Yeah. I just wish this scene didn't happen, because if they just ended the movie with Loki appearing on the throne disguised as Odin, it could have worked better. Like, there'd be questions of how did he get back, but it's Loki. You don't really need to answer that. We already know that there's a portal back to Asgard, which the Asgardians didn't know about. So they either used the Bifrost or we used the portal, but they couldn't use the portal because they didn't know about it.
Sure, whatever.
It's just weird.
So Thor's team goes to the convergence site on Earth, as does Malekith.
Which they find by X marks the spot. Random ancient things found only in England. Which is weird, because how do you know which ones to make the X with? And what about the other ancient things created on other places on the planet? This just seemed really unnecessary and strange. They should have just said, because science, and used their instruments.
I thought they did say because science and use their instruments.
No, they kind of did, but they found the rough area, which was Greenwich or whatever, by like connecting Stonehenge and something else and something else and something else. Also, they linked 6 points instead of 4, which was kind of weird, because usually you just do 4 and then do X marks the spot instead of asterisk marks the spot. This really bothered me.
Okay. I didn't even notice it.
I did.
So then they have their convergence fight through different portals, which I honestly love this fight, and I think it looks really cool.
It's really neat, but I find the Dark Elves to be really boring and Malekith's abilities to be very boring, which definitely hurts it a lot to me.
They are, but I don't think it takes away from the battle, but it does take away from this being the climax of the film, I guess. Like, as a villain, they're not very good.
Yeah. This also has the same problem of Iron Man 3 of, why didn't you call in more heroes? Of, there's an alien invasion on Earth, and they had a whole day's prior knowledge first. Why wouldn't they have called in backup?
They had a day's prior knowledge?
Or at least like a night. Remember, they planned it out, traveled to Greenwich, put all their stakes in. Like, that's plenty of time to get Iron Man over. Like, what are they doing?
Yeah.
Like, nope, we got it. It's like, no, but no.
You are correct.
The Avengers versus Malekith. I'll watch that movie.
That would be a very poor movie, since Malekith is a very bad villain.
I agree.
But anyways, we get Darcy and Ian kissing, which is funny.
That was hilarious. After Ian protects Darcy by using a gravity unlocked hammer. After Ian saves Darcy by throwing a car at a bunch of Dark Elves to save her, which was great. And it was hilarious.
And we get the funny scene of Thor falling through a portal and having to take the train back to where the convergence is happening.
And the girl just obsessing over his body.
Yeah.
Like, ooh, accidentally stumbling into him. Oh, oops. She's so uncomfortable around him because he's just so overwhelmingly attractive to her.
Yeah, who can blame her?
And then we get the scene with Darcy and Ian kissing, then being teleported next to Jane, and then Jane freaking out about it. Then Mjolnir flies by, and Darcy again can't say the name of Mjolnir, so she's like, Mjol, Mjol, which is funny.
Yeah.
Darcy is the best.
So we get a mix of hammer and portals, and they basically portal Malekith somewhere, which takes care of him.
Yeah. The conclusion of the fight is really cool, because using the convergence controlling spears or whatever the hell they're called, Thor teleports his arms away, which is brutal and really cool. And then he teleports all of them away to the Dark World. And then, after that, the entire ship that Malekith invaded with gets teleported to the Dark World as well and falls on him. Which is a pretty brutal way to kill a final villain. Although it wasn't on purpose, but it was cool.
Yeah, though that brings back the question of, if he could control reality, he could just cause his ship to cease to exist.
Yeah. Was the Aether still in him then? I don't really know how they extracted it from him. I don't really remember that.
They didn't show it. But
they just had it at the end of the movie.
Yeah, that's why I was confused. Because I'm like, okay, his body is just on a different planet with the ether in him now, I think.
I mean, it's back on the Dark World. Two other things I wanted to mention with the fight was that they get teleported to the ice giant world. and the monster from Thor 1 appears and pops into Earth to cause havoc in London. And also, fighter jets are brought in to attack, and fighter jets get lost on Vanaheim and stuff like that, which was cool.
And then we have Jane and the others eating dinner, and Thor's just back on Asgard. And Odin has this whole meaningful conversation with him where he's like talking about how Thor's a wiser king than Odin. But my first question to that would be, is he though? Because the plan that he was executing completely failed and he had to go fix it. But
I mean, all of this is a mute point anyways, because it isn't actually Odin, it's Loki. But it's
still a point though.
It's used in the movie as if Thor, it's like a good conclusion to the movie if it actually was Odin, but then it is Loki, so it's like it just falls kind of flat and confusingly.
It's really weird because Odin offers Thor the crown and Thor says he can't be king because the brutality of the sacrifice changes you and he'd rather be a good man than a great king. And Odin's like, one of my sons wanted the throne too much and the other won't take it. But
yeah, but what if Thor took the throne right then? Then Loki's plans would have failed.
I know. And then Odin says that he's proud of his son. But all this is so confusing because it's very Odin and it's all Loki. So we don't actually know Odin's feelings about this at all. And we never learn them because Odin is never dealt with in a way that it would matter again.
Yeah, it was a very odd choice.
I really hate this ending because we don't know what happened to Odin. We don't know how it happened. And we get like the bare bones of explanation later, but never in a satisfying way.
Yeah. So cool. Thanks, Loki, for whatever that was. And that's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
So after credit scenes. So the first after credit scene is Sif and Dwarf Guy of the Warriors 3 bringing the Aether to the Collector, which is our first taste of the greater space side of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and is very strange and foreign and really cool to see. Looking back at it now, it seems so familiar to me because I've seen movies with these characters in it later. But at the time, it was so interesting and strange. I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good call forward to Guardians of the Galaxy. And they do explain how it's not wise to keep two Infinity Stones so close together, which is why they're giving him this one, because they have the Tesseract. But I don't know why they're trusting him with it.
Me neither. And as soon as they leave, he's like, one down, five to go. Which is strange, because does he want them for himself? Does he want them just for the collection? Or is he working for Thanos? Why?
Yeah, he seems very ominous, and it seems very strange that they are entrusting him with one of the six most powerful stones in the universe. So I don't know why this is a thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, it is one of those things where it's an alien culture, so they should be kind of different, which, but also he is this ancient, really powerful being, because he's the Collector is like thousands and thousands of years old, right?
I don't know.
I think he's like a famously powerful being in a way, or a famously ancient being in a way. So maybe that's why they trust him.
I don't know why that would equal trust.
Me neither.
Yeah, but.
I feel like that's something that'll be answered a little bit more in Infinity War when Thanos wants that gem. When we see how the Collector is involved with that.
I really hope so, because all we've seen of him so far doesn't point to him being a good guy.
Nope. So the other after credit scene, Thor pops back, kisses Jane, and that's pretty much it, aside from the frost monster still being there.
You forgot the very important detail of her eating cereal.
Oh, sorry. Jane depressingly eats cereal, thinking Thor is never going to come back again. But he does.
And they kiss.
After only like 2 days.
And it's like the lamest after credit scene ever.
It is the lamest. Yeah, it's pretty weak.
Yep.
Oh, we did it. We made it through.
I feel like I complained about this movie more than I thought that I had complaints for it.
Well, this movie is not good. As I said, this is my least favorite movie in the entire MCU. So, shall we go to ratings then?
Yeah, what would you rate it, Henry?
I really want to give it an F, which on our scale is, this is really bad, trash, the worst. But I reserve that ranking for movies that make me so incredibly angry that they exist. That, like clearly someone needed to write this better. So I'm going to give it a D. Like, this is bad. It's not okay by any standard, but there's worse.
That's...
And God, it's just such a mess of a movie.
That's so
but
low.
But the Thor... What?
It's so low.
Yeah, I'm giving it a D. Thor and Loki's comedic interactions are the only redeeming factors to me in this entire movie. Odin seems really out of character. It has Jane in it. I hate Jane. Darcy also is one of the only saving graces of this movie. I just... Oh, God, it bothers me. The plot makes no sense.
So... I don't agree.
Yes,
there are a lot of issues and plot problems. But whereas Iron Man 2 and Incredible Hulk were fine and I had zero feelings about them, this one I still liked, and I liked more than Thor. I liked the characters. I still enjoyed watching it, and I was interested the whole time. In what was happening. So I'm giving this movie a B.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I just can't get into this movie. It just bothers me.
If we had a B+, I would probably give it that, but we don't. And
a B+, jeez.
We don't, and it doesn't deserve an A, so it's gonna get a B.
Definitely doesn't deserve an A. Yeah.
Well, I gave Thor a B, and I like this more than Thor.
Okay, fair enough. As long as you have that out there.
So, yeah. But I guess that wraps up our episode.
Yeah. So, Trey, where can they find us?
You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at MarvelousMCU. You can follow us on Instagram at MarvelousMCUPodcast. And you can send us an email at MarvelousMCUPodcast@gmail.com.
And wherever you listen to this podcast, whether it's on iTunes or YouTube, please leave a review and rate us. Anything you can do to spread awareness of the show is fantastic. And if you leave us a review or an email, we might read it on the show.
So thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us next time for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 1, Episodes 7 through 10.